This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Welcome to the Online Fraudcast. I'm Carice Hendrick.
And I'm Brett Johnson.
And we're both anti-fraud experts.
But with very different sets of experiences.
I've been in the anti-fraud space for over a decade working.
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. Making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
With some of the biggest online companies in the world to help them prevent payment fraud.
And prior to several years ago, I was a fraudster. I committed several different types of fraud online, ended up on the Secret Service's most wanted list, spent some time in prison. And since that point, I've...
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I've dedicated my career to helping businesses and consumers protect themselves against people like I used to be.
And the holiday crunch time for merchants is here.
Boy, is it.
Especially, you know, those of us focused on CMP fraud. We know it's a crazy time for a lot of you and want to provide some support on a few topics that you've reached out to us lately. So we are going to be running those for the next few weeks. Brett, you and I were talking yesterday about how fraudsters like the holidays too. And I thought that that would be an interesting way to start this off today because I didn't really think of it this way. I mean, so I'll just tell you what I said yesterday as far as like I've heard from some retailers who say that they don't really feel like their fraud rates go up at all in Christmas time, that they pretty much stay consistent, but just that the sales orders and the sales that are good but look risky go up. So it's like harder to sort through. So almost like the haystack is bigger, but the needles stay about the same. But I know other merchants who say the opposite. What do you say from a fraudster perspective? Do they like the holidays?
You know, honestly, for carding, and that's what criminals call CNP fraud. So for carding, the best time of the year is middle of October through the first week of January. Because, you know, at that point in time, you can get lost within that Christmas crowd. A lot of people, I mean, I do it too, as we buy things online and we have it shipped to alternate addresses. Sometimes we have it shipped out and we find out, well, the person's not going to be at that address, so we have to divert the package. I mean, there's all these things that go on that make it rife for fraud to happen. A fraudster understands that, you know, the traffic increases during Christmas season and that is the time to get lost in the crowd. It's not out of the norm for overnight orders to be placed, or for packages to be diverted, or for packages to be shipped to alternate addresses. Because of that, those types of things are exactly what fraudsters do 24/7, 365 days a year anyway. But during the Christmas season, more legitimate people do it. And because of that, fraudsters understand it. They understand that the orders are going to go through at a much higher rate for those people as well.
Yeah, and I mean, you had said too that fraudsters talk about on the dark web about how they know that a lot of merchants, especially those that use rules-based systems for fraud prevention, you know, like case management systems. So fraudsters know that merchants are that use rules-based systems have rule sets in the holidays that are a little more lax. They know that. And so they're, you know, taking advantage of that as well.
Well, I mean, absolutely. You have to. I mean, so if you're running a store that's selling, say, cell phones or I don't know, ATV goods or whatever you're selling, you know that during Christmas season that you're going to be shipping packages to addresses that are not the billing address. You know that. If you understand that, I mean, you have to let down your guard at that point to get those packages through, or you're going to be doing manual reviews on everything. Fraudsters right. understand that as well. Fraudsters understand, okay, all these guys are going to be ordering Christmas gifts to their sons, their daughters, family members, friends. Okay, that's fine. That all goes to alternate addresses. The only thing I need to do is find out what dollar amount that I can order with and come in at that dollar amount so that the dollar amount doesn't raise any fraud flags. Not only that, but use local cards. Have it shipped to an alternate local address as well. And what I mean by that, so people may not understand. So when you go to buy a credit card, it used to be when you bought stolen credit card data, that it was just kind of hodgepodge. You may get a card that was local to your state. You may get a card that's on the other side of the United States. That's the way it used to be. It's not like that anymore. Now, when you buy stolen credit card data, you can get credit card data that is local to your city. So if you buy that local data like that, and you're using an address that's within inside that city as well, that continues to come in under the fraud flags that merchants tend to use, especially during Christmas season. Fraudsters understand that. They share the information religiously on these fraud forums like Hidden Hand or Dream Market or anything else like that. I mean, it's all about sharing information and profiting for criminals is what it is.
Well, and to touch on that, I mean, you were just telling me right before we recorded, because we don't say company names on here, so which is why it was before we pressed record. but you were reading off some of the postings from Hidden Hand, which you've talked about before, but it's not necessarily a dark web forum, but it does have very strict user guidelines, and not just anyone can sign up. You either have to prove that you are a criminal or pay a large fee, because they know that law enforcement can't pay money to criminal organizations. So you're part of Hidden Hand. And I mean, I was kind of surprised at how specific they are. Like, one company they listed said you have to age the cookie for more than 4 hours. So go to the site, shop around, go away, and then come back.
Right.
And then make a purchase. And sometimes they say, you know, gift cards for under $50, you can get up to 10 a day, or, you know, mask your device this way. Or it's so specific, you guys. Like, I didn't realize how specific it was.
Yeah, it's a tutorial. It walks you through exactly what you need to do to hit that specific site.
Right. There's one company that we both know well, because I've worked with them in the past, not lately, but that you were saying that they put on the forum that the company requires you to provide an ID to scan it, but it doesn't have to be a legitimate one. And that as long as you provide an ID, you're good to go, and you can buy and sell gift cards all day long.
And here's the thing.
A marketplace type place.
Yeah, so I work with some companies that do ID scans that mm-hmm. you know, they say that we can determine if an ID is fake or not. The truth of the matter is it really depends on how good of a quality the copy is. How good is the counterfeit ID to begin with? Does it have the correct hollows? Does it have the all the print that needs to be there and everything else? The intricate designs on the ID, like California has and all that. Does it have that? Is a fraudster able to replicate that? And if he is, a company really trying to figure that out, it's not going to work. Not only that, but a few banks require ID scans as well. Well, those banks are extremely good about identifying counterfeit IDs. But what happens when someone like me gets your credit card and they fish the owner of the actual account holder to have them send in a copy of their real ID? Because that happens pretty frequently as well. It's all about, cybercrime's all about these workarounds. And these workarounds are shared on these forums, these large communication channels that criminals use to.
So it's not just one mouse finding the way, exactly. You know, in the cat and mouse game, it's one mouse fighting and then telling all of the mice,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, you can beat one guy.
Right.
Are you going to beat 4,000 or 240,000? You're not.
Right. No, absolutely. You are 100% right. I think that's really good information for people to have. And, you know, I hadn't thought about, of course I didn't, because I don't always think about it like this, but oh, so I have the credit card number. Now I just need to call the person and say, oh, you know, I, whatever the story is that gets them to send a copy of their
That's all it
ID.
takes.
And then now you can spoof it on these sites. It,
So imagine it like this. I've purchased your credit card data for $12 on one of these sites, all right? So I've got your social, I've got your date of birth, I've got your address, phone number, email, the card number, expiration date, and the three-digit security code. The site that I'm trying to defraud requires a scan of the driver's license. Now, I may be able to manufacture a driver's license, but why would I do that? And I can do that pretty quickly, but say I get this wild hair up my butt and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get her real ID and send it in. So what would I do? I'd pick up the phone, I'd spoof a phone number. Now, what phone number would I spoof? Well, I could do Social Security Administration. I could do the Driver's License Bureau. I could do your local police department, anything else like that. Call in, say it's a police department. So I call in, is this Carice Hendrick? Yes, it is. This is Detective James T. Lasky up here. I'm not sure what's going on. We've just brought somebody in that claims they're you. And look, they've got several outstanding felonies on them. Is there any way we can get you to verify your identity? Can you come down here? So you're going to be scared to death immediately. So I've asked you to come down to the station. Then I'm like, you know what? I tell you what. There's no need for you to really come down. Can you simply take a picture of your driver's license and send it over to me, or scan it, or something like that? Now, if I can scare you bad enough with that, the chances of you sending it in pretty high, unless you realize, well, you know what? Maybe it's not the police. Maybe I need to call back and confirm it's a law enforcement official. But it all depends on that spur of the moment to get you to react before you even think about it and send it in.
Wow. Yeah. No, we talked about that on a previous episode. I think more focused towards consumers, but I mean, absolutely. That's so easy to do
Oh,
because
yeah.
you're caught off guard. You're creating that sense of urgency. You're creating that fear.
That's it.
They want to take care of it right
And
away.
that name that I gave you, that Detective James
Oh,
T.
I know you
Lasky,
like his name. I've heard you say it before.
that was my name when I would call people. I would be like, this is Detective James T. Lasky, Kentucky State Police. Look here, we got a
Well,
couple warrants for
it
you. We
probably
need you to
worked
come
for you
down.
to use the same name over again, right?
Oh yeah,
Because
you
then you
develop
remembered it.
yeah
It's like your
you
own
develop this
name.
whole persona.
Yeah.
I
Oh, I
mean,
bet.
this whole thing that I'm like, I mean, I was horrible. I was horrible.
Oh,
So.
wow. Well, and the other thing I was going to mention about, you know, from my perspective, why I think fraudsters like the holidays, even like for the same reasons we talked about, but in addition to that, there's also a line of consumers ready to buy these goods, right?
Oh,
So
absolutely.
it's probably a lot easier during this time of year to, oh my gosh, what's the word I'm looking for?
Fence those goods?
Yes, to fence the goods. See, I don't even speak
I mean,
fraudster.
that's, I mean, that you're right. I mean, you take Christmas is the time where everyone goes into debt. So
Right.
if little
Looking for a
12-year-old
deal.
Bobby is wanting that PlayStation Pro, you can either go down to Walmart and you can pay $400 or $500 for it, or you can try to find a brand new one on Craigslist that may be for sale for $280 or $250. And when you see that like that, the chances of that being stolen, almost 100%.
Yeah.
I mean,
Oh,
it is.
absolutely. I mean, especially they always go for the, you know, most popular items because they
Absolutely.
know that they can, you know, get a good profit on them, but
Right.
also
And if
that
you're
they
a
can
buyer,
easily fence
you know,
them.
so you're the buyer, you have to be aware. I mean, I do not believe that someone who buys products like that for a cheap price like that, they have to know something's wrong with it. They have to know that the likelihood of it being stolen is pretty high. They're just looking for a bargain, looking to save money. That just makes the crime more popular, more prevalent. I mean, it helps to feed these criminals when you buy these items like this.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. We're probably preaching to the choir, but it
Of
definitely
course
is
we
a
are.
buyer beware, you know,
Oh,
if
yeah.
it sounds too good to be true, the whole nine yards with everything, but especially at Christmas time. I know you told a story a few weeks ago, and I get all the episodes mixed up, but about a coffee maker company that's very popular that last year had huge triangulation fraud. And it was just these fraudsters were just selling them left and right like
Oh,
crazy
yeah, going
for, you
crazy.
know, a little bit of a discount. It wasn't that steep of a discount because they didn't have to, but they were just using someone else's card, making the purchase, shipping it to the person that ordered it to them. And that was their business for Christmas.
And it was a great business. And as you and I are now aware, the new business is this whitelisting for fraudsters.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So changing gears a little bit. After we, like, towards the end of our last podcast, I mentioned that a merchant had reached out to me about items that were being shipped to the original cardholder. So billing, shipping, same, the cardholder's getting the product. We had a few theories on what the end game was, but I wasn't 100% sure, like, what really their mission was or what their goal was. Like, I didn't know, is it just pure card testing? Because some of the products are, they range from like 50 to 100 bucks.
Sure.
Honestly, several instances I heard of, both from merchants and a couple from victims, were shoes. And I don't understand that, because it's, you have to have the right size. One victim said the fraudster didn't even have the decency to order my size. And I was like, oh, sorry about that.
So they were shipping these items to the actual address, right to the building.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but using their card. And so we were like, okay, so were they placing one order to ship to the victim and then changing the address to ship more from that merchant? Did they try to do reroutes, but then the merchant no longer allowed them? And after, you know, so after we stopped recording, you shared a theory with me that I immediately hopped on the LinkedIn to share with my network, because I was like, whoa, I never thought that fraud systems could be used in this way to actually help and commit fraud. And I hadn't thought of this before. I bet other people are interested. And that post so far, just in a week, has had over 11,000 views. And mind you, I don't have 10,000 connections on LinkedIn like you do. I have like 2,500. So it got around, and there were about 25 comments. And it was because it was something new to everyone. And then there were also other ideas that came forward of things that people had seen. It was a really good discussion. And that's something I love about LinkedIn, is it's a really good way to connect with other people in the industry. And why don't you explain your theory? And actually, before I even say this, now in the last week, since we even heard about that from like a couple merchants, I've heard about it from two victims. Then on top of that, you talked to a sheriff's department in a pretty big city that's also has seen this so much. You said that they're just blowing up with this, with victims getting the goods. The reason why we're sharing this isn't just because it's, you know, new and different and whatever. It's also because it is happening a lot all of a sudden. And it's happening a lot because they figured out how it works. And you've now seen it also posted on the dark net. So with all of that layup, I'm going to let you kind of fill in what happens. I just wanted to set the stage for you.
So it's when you start looking at cybercrime, even the new crimes today, nothing is new under the sun. And it took me a couple, 3 days to really process what you and I were talking about. You know, I spewed that out. I'm like, okay, that's a theory. So then I went back and I've been thinking about it. It's been kind of, you know, cooking around in my head for a few days. And here's the thing: when we first started with not CNP fraud, but with counterfeit physical credit cards, what we used to do is we would go and we would buy some small item first, you know, like a dog collar or ping something at gas, something just to cost, you know, $5 or $10, and then you'd go over and you'd make a large purchase at Best Buy or something like that. So that small purchase followed by that large purchase. Of course, it didn't take retailers long to figure out, or processing companies figure out, okay, someone swipes for $5, go over and try to buy a $4,000 laptop. We know that's fraud immediately, and we're going to shut the card down. The reason I bring that up,
that was back in the good old days when it was easy to spot fraud.
Oh, absolutely.
That was when I started.
Now, here's the thing, though. The reason I bring that up is that what we're seeing now is kind of just an extension of that. So fraudsters understand, and even when I was committing fraud, we understood that if we went to, say, Apple, and this was back, you know, a decade or longer ago. So if we went to Apple and we bought an item for, say, $50, all right, and they shipped that item out, if the card is still alive after that, we could pump that price up. So you could buy something for $50 and then come back and try something for $500 or $1,500. The chances of it going through was pretty good because the first item already shipped. So what we're seeing this Christmas season is, again, it's kind of like this just logical extension of all this stuff that's happening. Fraudsters understand that consortiums run a lot of security. So you have a security company that handles an athletic store that sells shoes. Well, that security company may handle a laptop company or a cell phone company or an ATV company or camping goods, sporting goods, any number of things like that. They may handle 200 different merchants. Okay, so if I, as a fraudster, go to, say, the place that sells shoes, and I buy What I'm trying to do is I don't care. I don't care about what I purchase. I just need to purchase something that is not going to raise any fraud flags whatsoever. So how do I do that? So I don't want to raise any fraud flags. I'm using a brand new device with someone's stolen credit card. I place an order through this store that's selling socks and shoes. Say I order socks. So in order to make sure no fraud flags raise up, what am I going to do? I'm going to order those socks sent to the address that's the actual billing address. So the person, you know, the fraud flags are not there whatsoever. They send the pair of socks out. I send it by ground or just regular shipping, whatever that is. Now the victim, the actual cardholder, they're going to get these pairs of socks and they're going to say, what the hell? I didn't order these. No idea why they showed up. But from a fraudster point of view, what happens is that when I order that pair of socks and that pair of socks is approved and sent out to the actual cardholder, the device that I used to place the order is now considered a legitimate device within the entire consortium that the security company has. So it's not only a legitimate device for the store that sells socks and shoes, but it's also a legitimate device for the store that sells cell phones, as long as they operate under that same fraud consortium.
Right.
Right. So you've basically whitelisted a device.
So which now, you know, I get hung up on terms, and right. you always give me a hard time. You're like, look, fraudsters don't really care what the term is. They like, you know, because I said, well, whitelisting would assume that the merchant or the fraud company, the fraud prevention company, actually went in and said, yes, this address is good, 100%. And you really only do that for your really good customers. Sure. And now, because of ATO, whitelisting honestly doesn't make a lot of sense for a lot of companies. But that's, you know, how it's traditionally worked, so that those orders are always auto-approved. Right. So I'm only, like, jumping in to provide clarity because I know that a lot of
us... Somebody's going to say the same thing.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, somebody already did it on my LinkedIn, but I know that they will, and I know that they'll get hung up on the terminology, and that's easy to do because we all want to make sure we're talking about the same things. But keep in mind, a fraudster calls it whitelisting because they don't know, like, absolutely, what the difference between, like, whitelisting and not is. But at the end of the day, what Brett's saying is true. Whether it's officially whitelisted in the system as an auto pass or not, that is seen as a good thing in some fraud tools, not all, some, and we're finding it more on those legacy, like, linear rules systems that don't have, you know, that really you have to go in and say, if billing and shipping are the same, plus AVS is a match, which in this case it all would, plus if we use a third-party source for public records data, oh, look, they're also registered at that address. Boom, all day long. That isn't fraud. So clear it, clear it, clear it. Oh, and now maybe billing and shipping isn't the same, but that device was used to purchase something at another store. That those algorithms and those rules-based systems that pull the consortium data recognize that device as we've seen it before, and there isn't a chargeback associated to it. Now, they might have seen it before as in 5 hours or a day, and that isn't enough lag time for a chargeback to come in, not even close. Sure. I see why they're doing it and how it works. Another thing I can hear merchants thinking and saying is, well, how would they know, you know, what tools use which systems? And I know one very easy way to know.
Well, how is that?
And I struggle with this because I've actually written some of these before. You know, providers want merchants to provide case studies for white papers. They want them to speak with them at conferences. And that's good things. That's good to do. But that associates you with that company. And a lot of times those are publicized online and you can quickly do a lookup. Yep. I can think of several companies that I know who they use because of this type of thing. That's one way. The other way is on the service provider's websites. I don't think I've told this story before on the podcast. I definitely told you this before. Several years ago, there was a fraud provider that had a lot of retailers on it. And they bragged about it on their website, especially the best, you know, brands that they were able to. And honestly, now if you work with any of the big guys like Apple, Amazon, Netflix, you know, Google, all those people, and honestly, even some people that aren't even that big, they now have clauses in the contract saying you can't say, you know, that we use you. But they, especially at this point, like, they were able to brag about it on their website. And that's good for marketing for businesses. And I get that. And I know there's a lot of service providers listen to this podcast that are probably like really mad at me right now for saying this. But I think you just have to know the risk. And that is that this particular fraud provider got DDoSed and it pulled the whole network down. And during that network outage, every company that was listed on their website got hit for fraud really, really, really hard in those 30 minutes.
Fraudsters knew every single company that that fraud provider did business with.
Mm-hmm.
And they got it exactly like you said. They got it from the website themselves. They got it from calling and asking.
I was going to say that one too. Yep.
Sometimes it's in the terms of service. I mean, there's any number of ways.
Well, yeah, actually. Right. Good point. Like for GDPR, a lot of companies have to list that now.
Absolutely. If you have a list and you can take the fraud service provider offline. Oh, my God.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You go to town. Mm-hmm. And that was exactly what happened. And in this case, it's a little different, but it's similar in finding out who all uses the same people. I can tell you that the merchants so far that have reached out to me about this type of fraud all use the same fraud provider and have worked with them in the past in some way, whether it's white paper, speaking at conferences, attending events, you know, being tagged in LinkedIn posts, like whatever it is. I'm sure it's probably not down to the granular level of LinkedIn posts because that would take even more free time than most fraudsters have. But
they do
like do a lot of research. And so, you know, or if your fraud provider is making a list of all the companies that are attending their summits or customer events, those are just things to think about. I'm certainly not saying that, you know, if you're a merchant that you shouldn't do a white paper with your provider. I'm not saying that providers shouldn't do that at all. Like I said, I've written some of those white papers and they're great to help learn like, oh, that's, you know, it's great to know how much savings a company was provided or how much, you know, reduction in fraud they had. That's important. But know that we're not the only ones reading this.
No, and you
not even close.
I will throw this out, I guess it'll worry you.
So, oh, great.
I mean, you said it. I'm sitting there going, wait a second. LinkedIn. Fraudsters do use LinkedIn. It's not just a tool. It's not just a tool for business email compromise. I've actually the guy I published a blog report of his a couple months ago. That talked about it was that prepaid phone service for AT&T.
Oh yeah.
So he told me
he's the one that turned himself in. And he's working with the feds as an informant.
Well, and he's disappeared, so I'm not sure if he's still working for the feds or what. So hopefully, I'll hear from him in the next few days. Maybe not.
Well, that happened once before, and he popped back up. So he's a young kid who's kind of teetering the fence right now.
That is true.
And as my grandpa used to say, you can't, you know, can't ride two horses with one ass, but he'll figure it out.
So he told me when he was committing crime that he used to surf LinkedIn all the time looking for little tidbits of information that was being shared, or he had a LinkedIn account, and the only thing he needed to do was he would email or message through LinkedIn to one of these fraud providers and start asking them questions.
What other companies do you use you?
Huh. Right. How does your product work? Everything else. And he said people were very open about that information at that point.
Right. It feels like a safe place for people. I mean, I've definitely gotten some really spammy and, you know, very fake LinkedIn, requests from fake profiles, whatever.
So
but it's
a huge database of information.
Right. It is.
You can get whatever you want to from people.
Well, yeah. I mean, and we talked about it in the last episode, but we know a merchant who was doxxed pretty much with LinkedIn and other things. And, you know, unfortunately, also websites of conferences that she'd spoken at, and they got her picture and put out Twitter ads about it. I mean, it was awful how the lengths that this fraudster went to just harass this fraud manager. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways that, you know, like, what companies are you following on LinkedIn? You know, oh, you only follow your fraud provider? You know, that kind of thing. I think it's something to be aware of. I don't think it's something that we need to, like, be super terrified of and not do anything of.
If it wasn't LinkedIn, it'd be someplace else.
Exactly. If it wasn't white papers and marketing, you know, emails and events, it'd be another way. Absolutely. But people ask, they'll never know. Well, there are ways. So that's, you know, I wanted to get that out of the way. And just because right now I've only heard from merchants that are using, you know, one specific fraud provider and consortium doesn't mean that they're the only ones. And it doesn't mean that you're immune to it or anything else. I just right now so far it's that one, but that's just the people that are coming to me about it. That doesn't
and just to clue other people in as well. So I was speaking to the Denver Sheriff's Office that I want to be doing a conference for them in April. So they started asking these questions, and this topic came up about all these people receiving these items that they didn't order. And I was talking to them about it, and they were like, oh, that makes an amazing amount of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not just, here's the thing, the companies that they quoted, it's not just small merchants. It's these huge, huge merchants as well. So what's going on there is, think of it as, so you've got the largest online retailer in the world, and people are receiving items.
That's almost the same as calling them out by name.
But
come
I
on
didn't
now.
Say the name.
But, you guys start talking about a rainforest too? Come on now.
So they're getting items. Now the question is what's going on? Now here's the thing. You're not going, a criminal is not going to use stolen credit card data on that specific site. It's not going to happen. But if you can somewhat whitelist a device, a login or something like that, to show that you're legitimate coming in, then it helps to commit first-party fraud, this friendly fraud, this refunding that's going on. It helps with that as well. So
with
it's
gift
not
cards
just,
and,
right,
it's I not mean, just, with using gift cards, not buying
absolutely.
Gift cards.
Gift cards right. Or prepaid debits.
Right.
It's what's going on at that point. And it's not just, that's what merchants need to realize, it's not just committing credit card theft, it's also the first-party fraud that it opens wide up. It opens up a whole area of things that a merchant could be defrauded with.
Right. And if you don't know what he's talking about, go back and listen to our episode on friendly fraud, because right. Brett went into it at length about how fraudsters are now committing a different type of friendly fraud. It's different from what I call it, again, getting hung up on terminology, but it's still very important and still equates to losses on the merchant side either way. So, I mean, definitely the scariest thing for me is that, okay, here we are at the holiday season, right? We know that we're going to see fraud on billing and shipping, not right, which granted, just relying on billing and shipping is not enough these days, as we all know, but that is a huge indicator, right? So we already know that, okay, we're going to get fraud and we're going to get good orders that are shipping to other states, other locations, random IPs because everybody's traveling, like all that stuff. Then on top of that, now we've got billing and shipping match. AVS is a match. It matches what's on file with the bank. We've got it shipping to the cardholder. Like, how in the heck are merchants supposed to stop that? Like, that is so mind-boggling to me. And I think at this point, my best suggestion is to be aware of it. And if orders go into manual review and things look a little bit fishy, but billing and shipping match and AVS, don't just assume, oh, okay, yeah, this is legit 100%, because it's not, or it may not be, right. Not saying that it 100% isn't by any means, oh my gosh, you would have no orders for the holiday season. But I think that's the first one, is to be aware of it. And then the other thing I would say is just be a little extra vigilant on those things, and also talk to your fraud provider and find out how they're using that information with devices. Are they, are they incorporating it in as a good order when they've seen the device within a few days? Or
so let me ask you
all
this.
That stuff, right?
And this may be showing my ignorance. So I will step out there on the ledge and see if I fall off or not. So,
okay.
So, this is this whole process that I've been thinking about this entire week since we started mentioning this. The way that this fraud worked in the physical world was you would go and you would swipe at a gas station, and then you go try to buy a laptop. And the flags that were raised and fraud and companies knew to shut the card down at that point. So couldn't a consortium, and again, I may be showing my ignorance, but couldn't a consortium, since they are that consortium, wouldn't they see that a pair of socks, this cheap item, was sent out, and then, a week or whatever later, a laptop or a cell phone is being shipped to an alternate address at that point? Couldn't you use that as a fraud flag or not?
Who's seeing it?
Would the consortium see that?
So the way it works, and let me just say before I get a million emails that this is going to be a generalization. I know that every company with consortiums handle it very differently, but just in pure generalizations and in theory, because of privacy laws, there's only so much that the fraud provider can provide the merchant in the consortium. So usually
I'm literally like picturing a screen of one of the fraud providers' consoles, or, you know, what you look at when you're looking at an order. And you are looking at all the information about the order. You're looking at any history that that customer's had with your company. You're looking at if you have any plugins with other companies like that provide public records data, et cetera. And then there's usually like a little box that says like, has anything in this order been placed in the consortium, right? So you've got address, phone number, device, IP, whatever it is, like either listed out or not listed out. And it'll just say yes or no. And that's it.
Gotcha.
And that's on the manual review. So the thing that I think is happening, though, as far as gaming the consortiums now, is that it's all automatic. It's all these algorithms, right? So especially with rules-based, you're just, if billing and shipping match, that's plus 5 points. If AVS matches the billing address, that's plus 5 points. Okay. If they've seen, I mean, I'm literally just making up these points, but it is a point system. If they've seen that device before, and there isn't any negative history attached, that's like plus 3 points or whatever. Okay. So it's a plus. It adds to the legitimacy of the order, but it isn't like, oh, okay, we've seen this device, we'll pass it. It's just, it's one piece of it. But then the other thing is, on the flip side, has it been seen and has it been marked for fraud, which is actually what merchants honestly rely on consortiums for even more than have you seen this in a good way or a bad way, is has another company marked this, any of these identifiers, as fraud? The email address, the phone number, the address, the IP, the device, whatever it is, have they been marked? And if so, sometimes some companies will say what type of company it is, what the vertical was, because we all know that fraud in gaming is different than fraud in retail. The thing that trips me up with consortiums, and this is like a little bit of a left turn, just a tiny little detour, is when merchants use that 100% as like, okay, another merchant marked them as fraud, I'm 100% canceling the order, because that's subjective. There are some merchants that mark every single order that comes back as a chargeback as fraud, no matter what the reason code was and no matter what happened. That's going to muck up the system. That's going to, you know, so now what? That customer is now blacklisted on everyone that uses that same fraud provider. So you do have to like take it with a grain of salt, but it is a good piece of information. Same with the good stuff. The things that you could also ask your provider are you adding this to the point system? Like, is this a good thing? I mean, I think several of them do, but not all of them. How long of a time span is there? Like, can you show us how long of the span is? But that also requires manual reviews. You're not, it's kind of harder with rules based to really calculate that out in the algorithm. Like, you know, device within a week, or device, you know, device seen in consortium greater than a week, or whatever the rule is. Like, it gets challenging because the consortium isn't looking at, oh, well, I shouldn't say it. Some companies do spend a lot of time in the data in the consortium and are looking for patterns and are looking to help their customers and provide that information out and are providing that extra layer of support. Not as many as I know of that don't, that kind of just like set it and forget it. So when you said like, wouldn't they notice, who would know? Like, there's nobody who has the oversight, right? Because if I'm a merchant who sells computers, and I don't have the visibility in that consortium to see, oh, this device made a purchase, but it was just for socks and it was 3 days ago. Like, those specifics aren't shared.
Right.
They're all kind of underground and pretty anonymized. And that's, again, that's where we kind of get in our own way, but also we have to play by the rules. The other side doesn't.
Browsers don't. They never have. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. So then there's like this power imbalance.
So barring that, I mean, how the hell would you ever start to flag this kind of stuff?
My head is still, I'm not 100% sure, to be
because that was like, I mean, that was what I was thinking about the entire way. I was like, because, you know, that's a conversation, kind of like the conversation you and I had when we first met in person. I was like, why don't you guys share information?
I know. Yeah. Here you are like, God, you guys are a bunch of idiots. Why aren't you sharing anything? Why don't you start a forum like I had? And I was like, because companies have, I mean, I've tried and I have done something similar before, but there are so many rules. And when the lawyers get involved, they're like, oh my gosh, if somebody gets sued or if somebody gets an order canceled and they find out it's because of this forum, then we're going to get sued. And it's like a whole thing. Yeah. I mean, it's extremely challenging. That's where I'm at right now. I mean, I'm sure that somebody's going to come up with something. I think that having those layers are important, layers of fraud prevention, of case management system that has some sort of scoring, and then, you know, verification, device ID, those things. Even the, with the device ID consortiums, those can also be, you know, used in that way as well. So it, I think that being aware of it is going to have to be enough for right now. We'll definitely keep racking our brains and talking to people. This topic is coming up a lot, like we said. You and I have had several conversations just in the last week about it, not just with ourselves, between each other,
Hell, I'm still thinking about it. I'm sitting there. Okay, so you're shipping the fraudster is having the item shipped to the address on file. So once the person receives the product, then the person at some point is going to call the company and hopefully call the company and say, I didn't order this. But if, as long as the fraudster commits the fraud before that phone call is made,
yep,
to the actual customer,
then they've gotten through. Well, and also you're assuming that A, the customer is going to call, because in some cases the cardholder is going to call and say, hey, not only did you let fraud through, but I got your crap, like, you know, come get it. But there's also a lot of cardholders that say, well, screw them. They let my card get used fraudulently. Yeah, and so you don't have that feedback loop. But even if you do have the feedback loop, so say the cardholder calls into customer service to say that, now do you have a process set in place for customer service to even tell fraud in order for the fraud department to cancel that? At this point, you're not canceling it. You're marking that. You're putting it all on the negative list. You're putting that device on the negative list in the consortium. So, like, there's a few ifs in that line that even that is work. I mean, I've thought about this 800 different ways, backwards, forwards, because that's how my brain works, even at, like, 3 in the morning. And, I mean, maybe there's something that we haven't thought of, but right now, yeah, it's bad. And there's not a surefire way, really, to pay attention. I think talking to the company that provides your fraud services to find out what, you know, what they're doing, like what they're seeing and how they manage it, and if you're able to get any of that extra information, would be helpful. I mean, I really would love to be able to dive into their data and see, okay, socks were purchased on this date, a laptop was purchased on this date, or who are the merchants that they're, because I would imagine that there's only like a group of 10 to 20 merchants, maybe 34, that they know about on this one service, right? So they're probably just ping-ponging back and forth.
Right.
So
need to know a lot of the companies. They need to know a low security item, and they need to know that high value item. That's the only thing they need to know.
Right. And with this particular service, it's always been, I mean, honestly, with a lot of services, I mean, if billing and shipping match and AVS is a match, then all day long you're going to approve those. Right. And when you're trying to reduce your manual reviews, that makes sense. And that's never been an issue before. This kind of reminds me of like when account takeover first started and everyone was kind of like, oh my gosh, this is a big problem. It's hitting everyone, but we don't really know how to solve it. And the reason I bring that up is that now there are solutions for account takeover. So I don't think that this period of time is going to be long. And I mean, between you and I both thinking about it, as well as I know we have a lot of smart people that listen to the podcast, like they're going to think about it too. But we really felt, while I hate to provide a problem without a solution, we felt like it was really important to share this with you guys, especially if you're, you know, seeing that. The other challenge I see from it from a chargeback perspective is, in any other situation, I always advise my consulting clients when we're working on, you know, the right chargeback response process to respond to chargebacks that are claiming fraud on, you know, if the billing and shipping matches and it's AVS and you can say online, you know, they live at this house. That is a slam dunk for a fraud chargeback every day, all day. You can get that money back. But now you're victimizing good cardholders. So that's another challenge that I don't really know how to fix either. But just throwing that out there is something that I see down the line, especially January, February, it's going
to
get
stuck. Yeah, and to feed into that, I frequent a lot of the fraud talk that's on Reddit as well. There was a victim on there that was talking about this fraud. He had received the items. He did not order the items. The company that had sent the items, they initiated, you know, he did the chargeback and everything, and the company made him, it was the way it worked out, that he ended up paying for the items he did not order. No idea how the hell that happened, but that's exactly what
happened. Well, probably the chargeback was fought, and he lost the chargeback. You know, the other thing I just realized, oh my gosh, this is getting worse and worse as I think about it. I feel like a Debbie Downer. No, this, think about it in the succession. Not only for chargebacks, but now you're putting the good cardholder on your negative list.
Right.
Because I was thinking about, you know, like, no, we need to get the device ID on the negative list right away, which you do. But now, are you putting the cardholder's address and their phone number on the negative list? So now the good cardholder goes to buy gifts, maybe not from your website, but another website that uses the same service. And, oh, they're put on the negative list. Right. And so, I mean, this is really messy. It has a lot of consequences for a lot of things operationally, just in the process of fraud throughout the life cycle, whether it's at the beginning, you know, hard to detect, hard to put on the negative list, really hard to know which chargebacks to fight, not fight. Because, yeah, if that stuff happens, you're not just going to have customers on Reddit. You're going to have cardholders on Reddit. You're going to have cardholders on Twitter, on Yelp, on Better Business Bureau, all over the place complaining that, you know, absolutely, I was victimized by this company and I didn't even get my money back. I had to pay for something that was stolen. That is not good for your brand. So, sorry, guys.
Oh, you're right, Debbie.
Happy holidays. Right. I know. Gosh. Yeah. I do rest assured that if we do solve this puzzle, gosh, maybe we could retire, but... because it's going to be a really big problem. I mean, if we can solve this problem, I'm saying, like, you know, we could sell it, retire it. But we, you know, knowing us, so we'll share the information. But we'll definitely let you guys know. But we wanted to make sure that everyone knew about this right away. What I did also want to add is that the post on my LinkedIn sparked some other good, like, boots on the ground stories of what others are seeing too. There were just some other fraud situations that were happening when goods are shipped to the victim or the cardholder in this situation. So know that we are assuming that the main motivation of fraudsters is to be whitelisted, so to speak, on the consortium, but not too much because they're talking about it a lot on the forums. Sure. So it's not too big of a stretch, but we don't know what the percentage is, right? So, like, if we're talking about a pumpkin pie, for instance, or just a pie in general, like, we don't know how big the slice is for the motivations to whitelist cardholders versus other things. But some of the other things that could be happening is that the fraudster will call a victim as the victim company or mail them a shipping label from the company and say, oh, we realized that we sent you something by mistake or that your card was used on our site. Please use the shipping label to return the item. Great customer service. Except if the fraudster is the one sending the shipping label, chances are it's not going back to the merchant.
Right.
That's one thing that people said that they've seen. And there's also been cases of fraudsters tracking the package, and they may not be able to reroute on the way from the merchant to the cardholder because of the rules that merchants have put in place, just like we talked about last week. But a lot of times there aren't any restrictions when a customer does return to sender. And the package has the exact same tracking number and is going from victim or card/cardholder back to the merchant. And so if a fraudster is really patient, they'll watch the tracking number be delivered to the cardholder. They'll hope that the cardholder does a return to sender because they didn't order it. And then they'll call the shipping company when it's on its way back to the merchant and say, oh, man, I put it in the mail back to the merchant, but I actually meant to send it to my sister. Can you, you know, or, oh, I changed my mind, but I really think that my mom would like it. Can you ship it to this address? So that's happening, as well as there's been a couple cases in some geographic locations, and unfortunately, especially around the holidays, because so many delivery drivers are hired seasonally, but the delivery drivers are either on the take or they got the job specifically to do this. And so they'd be working with reshipping rings. So it's important to pay attention to zip codes and geographic patterns, as that might be the issue. And definitely, I would say if you're having situations of cardholders calling and saying, what is happening? Like, or, you know, mad that they got the product and then, you know, they have the product or whatever it is, I would say get in a conference room with customer service and a few people from each team and really honestly map out a process of what are we going to do when this happens? How are we going to get the information to the fraud team so they can do what they need to do? What kind of things are we going to tell the cardholder that it happened? I mean, other than just giving a lot of empathy, but, you know, asking them to send it back to you. So at least you're not out the product. You're out the money, but you're not out the product. Also I would really strongly suggest that you advise those cardholders about it because they don't know what's going on and they're kind of mad at you for passing that order, right? They don't know how hard it was to spot. So providing a few tips like, hey, you know what? If somebody else calls you with a shipping label or whatever, don't use that shipping label. Use it here. As you'll see, the address that's on the shipping label that we just sent you goes, if you Google that address, it goes to our corporate office. You know, hey, somebody might try to call you and say that they're from our company, or here, use a fresh brand new tracking number. Those kind of things. Providing them tips is going to help them know that you're trying to do something, because they now see you as like a lackadaisical company that is just letting fraud through. So, you know, if you show like, hey, you know what? We're really sorry that happened. Here are some things to watch out for. We want to help you. And then also notate that account so that you don't fight that chargeback. Those are some things that you can do to lighten the blow a little bit and also help with brand image as well as just customer satisfaction, because we know that a lot of victims, after they're victimized with their credit card, they tell 5 to 10 friends and they name that company. And so you want them to have a good experience, not a bad experience about that.
I agree. And to feed in what you were saying there, so like the reshipping labels, if a fraudster is going to that trouble, most of the time it's going to be a phone call. So the laptop shipped from, and I'll use Apple because Apple's great with security. But say the fraudster somehow manages to have a MacBook Pro sent to someone's address, their actual address with their credit card. So what that fraudster is going to do is he's going to track the package. He knows the exact time the package is delivered and everything else. Within an hour, that fraudster is going to pick up the phone. He's going to spoof Apple's number, call in to the cardholder and say, hey, you know what? Looks like we had a big error here. I don't know how this happened, but you received a MacBook today on us? The guy's going to go, yes, I did. Well, look, we apologize for that. We're going to email you right now a mailing label. If you can just simply send that back to us, we'd appreciate it. And I tell you what, we'll even have the FedEx driver will come by and pick it up. So the only thing you have to do is just attach the mailing label to it. Would you mind doing that for us? We really appreciate it. And try to talk the person to send it back. The item is going to have to be worth it. It's not going to be some low dollar item. It's going to be cell phones. It's going to be laptops, some expensive item for the fraudster to take the time to do that. That specific type of fraud, though, that's crazy successful. We used to, because when I was running cards, we didn't have the ability to get a lot of local cards. They were just, like I said, a hodgepodge. You would get whatever cards were sent to you for whatever states or whatever. And what a lot of people used to do is they would do that type of fraud. They would order the item to the actual address on file, but they'd take a road trip. So they would intercept. So you if you had four cards in Alabama, you would order all the items in Alabama, and you would try to take a road trip and actually intercept the driver on the day of delivery. So you'd drive around the neighborhood, see the FedEx driver, UPS driver, and run up to him and say, hey, you got a package for me, and try to intercept it at that point. I used to do that all the time. I mean, it's very successful. To this day, it's successful to do that. We're sitting here talking about this whitelisting and everything else, and I'm sitting there going, wow, this is crazy bad this year.
I know. I feel bad. It's like, happy holidays, guys. But I mean, at the same time, knowing about it is half the battle, right? And my worry is that it's going to impact false positives, but I think that it's so ingrained in everybody who's in fraud prevention that billing and shipping match, AVS match, public records match, that is in no way fraud whatsoever. And I think that what's really important to know is that it can be now. And, understand how your fraud service provider uses their consortium. I'm sorry to the fraud providers that are listening to this who are going to, be getting a lot of phone calls. But then again, I mean, I think it's important for people to understand how it works so that they can understand how to better get on top of it and how to, work with it. And there might be a way to opt out of it if you really feel like that would be helpful, but that may not stop you from being victimized by this fraud, whether you're hooked in or not, because the fraudster doesn't know if you're in it or not.
Right, right. Oh, geez. Well, I'm just, you've done your job, Debbie Downer.
Yeah, sorry about that. My gosh, I feel horrible, but like, yeah, no, I mean.
You're right. I mean, it's.
Every once in a while.
And that's what I say about phishing and everything else, is the first step is to just be aware that this is going on and have it in the back of your head at all times. And if you're a company, you know, if you've seen it happen, say you get a report that someone didn't order that camping gear or laptop or whatever that is, if you see it once, I can promise you that you're about to be hit really hard with it, because, you know, the guy who's done the fraud, he's testing your system, he sees that it works there, and then he's going to share it with his inner circle, and it's going to go wild for you. So it's raising awareness and understanding why this fraud is happening, why these items are being sent out to the actual addresses on file. And then you can start having it in the back of your head, okay, we need to watch these orders more carefully at that point.
Yeah, and I mean, my hope, I guess, is just that we can raise awareness, right? There's a lot of people that don't know that this is happening, so I think that's, you know, again, the biggest thing. And yeah, like you've said before, they're posting this stuff on these forums left and right. Like, hey, if you make a purchase at this merchant and then you make a purchase at this merchant, by ship to the cardholder, then you're able to make purchases at this merchant, or this merchant without any issues. It's kind of similar to aging the cookie, right? Like,
absolutely.
In my mind, absolutely. It's similar. The one other thing I want to make sure that we kind of shoved in here while we're talking about it, and maybe should have like earlier and whatever, but we're all over the place a little bit. But one thing that you mentioned to me the other day, because we've talked about this a few times over the phone this week, because we're both hearing about it from different people and we're like, holy cow, this is really big. One thing you mentioned is that you think that this is increasing now because not only did Alphabay go under last year, which you've talked about often, but also that Luxox was hit pretty hard in the fall. And Luxox was the provider of the best SOX 5 proxies. And so now, why do you need a proxy service? You know, now that there's less supply of proxies, of good proxies out there that fool these proxy piercing, you know, rule systems, or just general rule systems and IP address, you know, services that provide that. Because the supply is down of these SOX 5 proxies, now they're finding another workaround with the device situation, of another way to kind of get around it. And, oh, well, now we'll just make the device look good, so I don't have to go, you know, mask it.
Right. So, you know, it's and Luxox is back up and they're running fine now. But for a couple months there, they were hit pretty hard. So talking about these proxies, these ways to obscure or hide or change your IP address, you can do it through a SOX 5 proxy. You can do it through a remote desktop. A lot of fraudsters, because of Alphabay, so Alphabay shut down, and then Hanza Market shut down at the same time, that caused such paranoia and dissension among the entire cybercrime community that everything kind of schismed. It left the dark net. Some of the people left the dark net. They went over to Reddit. They went to Facebook groups. They went to places like that. They set up ClearNet sites as well, like Hidden Hand. What happens when something like that goes on, a lot of your more experienced criminals, they decide to just go solo. So it's this thing of, okay, I'm not going to network with anyone. What can I do that's just me? That way, if someone, you know, if I'm networking with someone, if they're caught, they're going to tell on everybody, because that happens. You know, when I was caught, oh yeah, I sung like a bird. Who can I tell on? Who do you want me to tell on? So... And it's not just me. It's every single person that commits cybercrime.
Right.
And not just cybercrime. It's
white collar.
When I was in federal prison, everybody rats. Mm. The ones who didn't rat, they ended up with 20 or 30 years, and they sat there. I had a guy literally tell me, I wish I would have told.
Well, yeah, so I bet.
That's the attitude.
Right.
It happens, and it's...
It seems like white collar crime, you know... All fine and good to do it behind a computer screen, but once you're in, you know, in the box, so to speak, they usually flip pretty fast.
Once you're in a cell and you see what it's like to have to use the restroom in front of other grown men,
oh my gosh,
you decide you'll do whatever you have to get out of that environment.
Yeah, let alone like moldy bologna sandwiches. Yeah, exactly, I would too.
Exactly.
No, it makes sense. Oh, right. That makes sense. So now I don't have to rely. I'm seeing that all these people are going down. If I'm a bad guy, I'm seeing all these people are going down, solo. That the marketplaces are getting, you know, shut down. So I can't rely on anything for too long. So I'm just going to go off.
What do you do? You can still use a SOX 5. SOX 5s, as long as a fraudster knows how to use it properly, meaning the DNS matches, meaning he's got WebRTC shut off, all this other good stuff. As long as he uses it properly, you're not going to be able to tell that he's using a proxy. That's the entire purpose of a proxy, is to make sure you can't tell if someone's using it. So he can do that. If he doesn't know a really good proxy provider, that's okay. He can go and get an Android device. He can root it. He can change the IMEI on it and use that device to commit fraud at that point and just keep resetting the phone over and over and over again to show us a new device. It's pretty easy to do that because cybercrime is sophisticated enough now that you're using cards that are local to your area. The IP numbers match like they should everything else. And that's that's more of a solo activity at that point. So we're seeing that transition. And I mean, it's going to go back to more networking. We're seeing it starting to move back to more networking type crimes right now. But the upper tier guys, because of what happened last year, they're going more toward this solo stuff. And when you start going toward the solo stuff, and I was the exact same way, when you start going toward that solo type activity, you understand the power of that. Okay, I don't have to rely on other people. The only person I have to rely on is my credit card provider or my bank login provider or something like that.
Right. And side note, separation. Credit card provider to a fraudster is a little bit different than credit card provider to...
Well, yes, when I say it, I mean a provider of illegal credit card data.
Right. That's I knew that. I just wanted to verify that.
Oh, yeah.
Again,
oh,
yeah. Hanging up on terminology, but I thought that was important. Like, wait, so they have not a legitimate one, but right. So but, yeah, cutting down the number of people right. You depend on.
You're completely right in everything you're saying. It's certainly you have all the newbies that are engaged in cybercrime, but... As cybercrime becomes more and more sophisticated, even the newbies are starting to get these ideas. They're starting to understand, okay, I don't need to network with a lot of people. I need to just find something that I can do or that a minimal amount of people are involved with. Even the newbies are starting to understand the importance of being patient when you commit crime. It used to be that a new guy would engage in cybercrime and he was very impatient. He would be trying to cash out as soon as he could, everything else. But because of synthetic fraud now, because of these things like this whitelisting for criminals and everything else, because of that, they're starting to see, okay, if I just take my time, if I just wait in the system long enough, the longer I wait, the more legitimate I look. And it's that degree of patience, that idea that is becoming more and more prevalent among every aspect of cybercrime right now.
Fascinating. So what I think is kind of funny is that at the beginning of this, you were like, we can probably talk about this for about a half an hour.
I think we got 30 minutes. So we're an hour three in.
Yeah, uh-huh. I knew it'd be close, but it knew it'd go over. But as we're wrapping this up, I have to say, like, we've continued to hear from a lot of you guys, especially now that we're back doing merchant episodes. And thank you. Like, we love to know that this has been helpful for people. It's certainly fun for us. Obviously, Brett and I could talk about fraud for hours and hours. I mean, we do in our lives, but you know, this way it's helpful for, it's more productive than just us talking on the phone to each other and educating each other. It's hopefully educating more people in the industry. And, you know, I just have to say, like, I'm sorry that this is a problem without a solution right now. But I'm not sorry that we're providing the problem, because that's better than not knowing about it at all. So that's, you know, that was the call we made. I just feel so crappy about like leaving it on that note. But, you know, as new information comes through, we'll definitely be providing it in future episodes, possibly blog articles and definitely, you know, LinkedIn posts as well.
Oh, absolutely. So I guess that's it for episode today.
I think so.
Look, regardless of how depressed everyone is after this episode, thank you for joining us. I've learned a lot during this episode. I'm sure a lot of people out there have learned a lot as well. You know, we've got so many more of these topics. Hopefully not as depressing as this one, but we want to help you protect yourself and your company from fraud. So please subscribe to the Online Fraudcast to be alerted to when a new episode is out. Please tell your friends, rate and review wherever you can, to help others learn about these topics as well.
As you were saying that, I was cracking up in my head that, you know, we're about to be selling advertising in the next few months. And wouldn't this have been the bright episode to have like an alcohol, like a beer or a liquor company sponsor the episode? I swear.
Or not break into a Budweiser.
Right? Not that I'm advocating for drinking your problems away. It just seemed like a good little, you know, lead in there. And I have heard feedback that people like our tangents. So, you know, we don't want to disappoint anyone.
Well, Lord knows we've got enough of those going.
He's basically pointing at me all the way from Alabama as he says that.
It was me.
Well, on that note, we want to continue to hear what you love so far about the podcast, how we can improve, what topics you want to hear us discuss. A lot of these topics come from our organic conversations in our consulting practices, but they also come from listening to reading stuff from listeners as well. You can find Online Frogcast on Facebook, on our website, www.onlinefrogcast.com. Or find us individually on LinkedIn. Or you can email us at info@onlinefrogcast.com.
And until next time, stay informed, stay vigilant, and stay secure.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.